Meeting of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. I'd like to welcome all of you here today. We are back in person for the first time in a very long time. So that is really a milestone for us, and let's hope we can keep it that way with, you know, all staying reasonably healthy and well. And with that, I know, of course, we don't require masks anymore. I do see a few folks with them, and I think that's great. I encourage that. If I wasn't chairing the meeting, I'd probably be wearing one myself. So, but of course, you know, do what you need to do. But of course, if you're not feeling well, we would all ask you kindly to go home and take care of your health needs. So a quorum is present, and we can begin our first hearing with some introductions. We do have a very busy agenda today. We have a lot of folks who want to testify in this committee. It is my intention to keep the hearing to its normal time period, so we would be ending at noon. So I'm going to ask everyone to please introduce themselves briefly. I think we'll start with members, and just if you would just tell us your name, maybe where you're from, and we will, hopefully as time goes on, we'll have more time and we'll get to know each other on the committee much better than that. But with that, I'm State Representative Tina Liebling from the Rochester area, and I'm in my 10th term, and really glad to be here with all of you today. So with that, I'm going to start with members, and then we'll go to staff. So Representative Keel, would you? Oh, I don't see. I would go to Representative Schumacher. Oh, right. Oh, there he is. He's behind. There he is. Oh, you're on the wrong side of the table. Sorry, Representative Schumacher. Why don't you start, and then we'll go to Representative Keel.
Representative Schumacher from the wrong side of the table. Representing Southwestern Minnesota. This is my 7th term and glad to be here. Thank you.
Good morning, members. I'm Representative Deb Keel. I represent District 1B up in the northwest corner of Minnesota, and this is my 7th term.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bernie Perryman. I'm from House 14A, which is South St. Cloud, St. Augusta, Waite Park, and St. Joe. This is my first term.
Good morning, Representative Ann New Brindley. I'm in starting my 4th term, and I represent most of Chisago County, so Lindstrom, Taylor's Falls, Wyoming, North Branch, and everything in between.
Morning, my name is Tom Murphy, representative from 9B, which is East Otter Tail and Western Douglas counties, and this is my first term.
I'm Jeff Backer, my first 5th term. I represent West Central Minnesota. I'm the only district that borders North Dakota and South Dakota, 4 counties. So I'm on that hump, bump, tip, elbow, nose that sticks into South Dakota. So thank you.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is Danny Nadeau. I represent Rogers, Dayton, and Champlin.
Madam Chair, Dwayne Quam, 7th term, and one of the 3 people that represent part of Olmsted County, where they have a little entity called Mayo.
Representative Bierman.
Representative Bierman, Apple Valley, 3rd term, and 3rd time to serve on this committee.
And our vice chair.
And the vice chair. Thank
you. Representative Andy Smith, I am from Rochester, 25B. I'm a first termer, first time, obviously, on this committee.
Madam Chair and members, Kalee Vanghur, and I am in my third, this is my 3rd term, District 64A here in St. Paul.
Good morning, Representative Patty Akam from House District 45B, Western Suburbs of Minneapolis, and this is my third term, second time on this committee.
Hello, Representative Liz Ryer. I'm in my 2nd term representing Eagan and Burnsville.
Good morning, Amanda Hemmingson-Yeager. This is my first term representing 47A, the communities of Southern Maplewood and Woodbury.
Good morning, Representative Peter Fisher, representing 44A, which is all of Little Canada, parts of Maplewood and North St. Paul.
Representative Steve Elkins, I represent the western half of Bloomington. I'm in my 3rd term, 1st term on this committee.
State Representative Kristen Bonner. This is my 3rd term, and I am representing the thriving community of Maple Grove.
I am Ned Carroll, 1st term, Plymouth, 42A, a little bit of Maple Grove, and both communities are thriving.
All right, thank you, members. So let's go now to staff, and let's start with our Committee Administrator.
Morning, everyone. My name is Josh Sandy. I'm the new Committee Administrator for this committee. It's my first term in the House, as evidenced by my paper name placard. So,
Ms. Clarkvist.
I'm Elizabeth Clarkvist with House Research. I cover Health Department and public health issues for this committee.
Joe Harney, House Fiscal, second term, staffing this committee.
Please.
Jonathan Cotter, GOP Research.
Okay, and we'll go this way now.
Kristen Niederhofer, Committee Legislative Assistant.
I'm Sarah Sunderman. I'm also from Nonpartisan House Research, and for this committee I would cover health occupational licensing and DHS central office and operations.
Joe Durheim, DFL Caucus Research.
Danielle Pinelli from House Research, and for this committee I cover the economic assistance programs.
Randy Chun with House Research. I cover issues mainly related to MA and Minnesota Care.
Wonderful. And then we have some new pages, I believe. Would you like to step forward and speak into the microphone and just tell us your names and maybe where you're from?
Thank you. Tenzin Siam, Committee Page, House Sergeant at Arms Office, from Chattanooga.
Welcome. Okay. Is there an... Oh, yes, please.
Stephen Walker, from St. Paul, first term as a Committee Page. Happy to be here.
All right. Thank you very much. And I, looking around the audience, I'm not sure, can folks hear? You can. Okay. If you can't, please let us know, and we can speak closer into the microphones. Very good. Okay. So, well, it's wonderful to have everyone here. Thank you very much for those introductions. And so now we are going to move to our first bill. But before we do that, I just would like to make an introductory remark here, and that is that normally we have a slower windup for the committee. We start with a lot of overviews and so on. This year we're jumping right into a bill. And I understand that what we're taking up is a contentious issue and that there are deep feelings about it. Really, probably everyone in this room has deep feelings about the bill that we're going to hear. So I really want to remind everyone that we need to maintain decorum here as we discuss this issue. And that will make this easier for everyone. We are going to, of course, the rules are we don't have signs in the audience. I don't see any. That's wonderful. Please, no applause, no shouts from the audience. And I would just like to say that if we can't maintain decorum, we have many testifiers. Unfortunately, we can't give you a lot of time. Each person is going to have only a minute and a half when we get to that portion of our program. But I expect every testifier to maintain courtesy. So if there's any name calling, anything like that, I will end your testimony, unfortunately. So I think we can have a civil discussion where we all hear each other's points of view and maintain that decorum. It's going to be very important. So with that, I am going to invite up to the testifier table our author. Representative Carly Katizawatoon, sorry. And because she's not on the committee, the chair will move that House File 1 be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law. So is that correct? The correct motion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Very good. All right. And so with that, the bill is before the committee, and Representative Katizawatoon, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members and Minnesotans, almost 50 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court assured individuals privacy and bodily autonomy in accessing reproductive health care through Roe v. Wade. In Minnesota, our privacy and bodily autonomy similarly hangs in the balance on legal precedent of Doe v. Gomez. What happened to Roe could happen in Minnesota, too. Over mere months, 15 states across the country have banned abortion. This past election, voters spoke decisively and told us that they believe every Minnesotan should be able to make their own reproductive health care decisions. House File 1, the Protect Reproductive Options for the PRO Act, establishes the fundamental right for each Minnesotan to make decisions about their own reproductive health care, including the right to utilize contraception, family planning, and fertility supports the right to carry a pregnancy to term, and the right to abortion. These decisions are deeply personal and private and should be made by a patient and their doctor. The PRO Act is a short, simple bill that will protect Minnesotans' reproductive freedom and codify our rights into law. Short walkthrough on the bill. House Research is here if anyone has any specific questions. But Subdivision 1 establishes the title, the Protect Reproductive Options Act. Subdivision 2 defines reproductive health care. It includes, but is not limited to, contraception, sterilization, preconception care, maternity care, family planning and fertility services, and counseling regarding reproductive health care. Subdivision 3 establishes the fundamental right to reproductive health care. Subdivision 4 recognizes the fundamental right to reproductive health care is established within the Minnesota Constitution. And Subdivision 5 prohibits local units of government from regulating an individual's ability to exercise the fundamental rights in this section more restrictively than is set forth in this section. Madam Chair, with that, I'm happy to move on to my testifiers.
Okay, and so we have some brief testimony, and so we'd like to call to the table Dr. Brooke Cunningham, who is our new commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Health. And welcome, Commissioner. We're very glad to have you, and congratulations on your new position, and I'm sure that the entire committee looks forward to working closely with you throughout this session.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Members of the committee, good morning. Again, my name is Brooke Cunningham. I'm the new Commissioner of Health. I previously was the Assistant Commissioner for Health Equity at the Department of Health, and I'm very happy to be here with you all today and to continue to work with you in the future. So yes, doctor's in front of my name, so I'm trained as a physician, a general internist, as well as a sociologist. I've spent most of my time in my career as a researcher, and specifically a researcher in health equity. We know how important reproductive health and reproductive freedom is to achieving health equity. I would like to take one moment in the time that I have with you all today to read a couple of quotes that I think are particularly important in that framing. Recently, authors from the National Birth Equity Collaborative wrote an article in JAMA. Now, that's one of our leading medical journals, and they defined reproductive justice and birth equity, and I'd like to take a moment to share with you what they said. So, reproductive justice is defined as the human right to maintain personal bodily autonomy, to have children, not have children, and parent the children we have in safe and sustainable communities. Birth equity cannot be achieved without full bodily autonomy for all people, ensuring access to full spectrum reproductive health care services, including contraception, infertility treatment, and abortion care. When people are empowered to make decisions about their own health, they have better health outcomes, and it is the responsibility of clinicians, healthcare researchers, and policymakers to support this cause. And so when I come before you, before this committee as Commissioner of Health, I will bring in a lot of experiences, some from academia, some from my work as a clinician, and a lot from my lived experience as well. And all of these sources in this case tell me something very important and very simple, that reproductive health is health care, and also that restraining reproductive freedom tends to impact members of our most disadvantaged communities the most. And the one other thing that I will just bring in here as a clinician and a equity proponent is that we have to trust people. That is key to equity. We have to trust people to make the right decisions for their bodies, for their health, and for their well-being. And so as we move forward, we know as a state that wants to address the stubborn health inequities, we want to remove all barriers to doing that, and I'm happy to see that this bill is here before you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cunningham. And next we have Dr. Sarah Traxler. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Sarah Traxler, Chief Medical Officer of Planned Parenthood North Central States. I'm a board-certified obstetrician-gynecologist, and I am proud to provide abortion care to my patients. Along with a broad spectrum of essential healthcare services like cancer screenings, STI testing and treatment, contraception, annual exams, and infertility consults. As a doctor, every day when I walk into the health center, I know my patients will come in from all walks of life. Some are already patients, some are really scared, and many of them have questions. And every single one of them is unique. Like my patient, a mother of three, who was struggling to make rent and knew that she needed to take care of the children that she already has. Or my patient, who drove 9 hours to see me because none of her local doctors would take care of her, even though she had a lethal fetal diagnosis. While no two patients are the same, I know that all patients deserve to control their own bodies and their futures. Since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, Planned Parenthood North Central States has seen a 13% increase in patients coming from out of our region and a 40% increase in second trimester abortions. Abortion is essential health care. States with strong access to abortion have lower maternal mortality rates, lower infant death rates, improved prenatal care access, and higher contraception uptake. I see the reality of people forced to travel out of state for abortion care. 18 states have bans or near total bans on abortion. Minnesota's abortion access is critical right now for Minnesotans and for people across the country. We need the PRO Act so that Minnesotans and all patients know that they are welcome here. We must reassure them that Minnesota supports them, and our commitment to their reproductive rights and health care will not change. Healthcare providers need that reassurance too. We need to know that our medical, ethical obligations to care for our patients are not restricted by politics. Minnesotans deserve to make their own healthcare decisions based on science with experts, not politicians or judges. By passing the Protect Reproductive Options Act and codifying reproductive rights into state law, Minnesota can become a national leader for reproductive freedom and equity and improved public health overall. Passing the PRO Act would be a historic step in the right direction and makes me hopeful for the future of Minnesota, knowing that future generations will have the bodily autonomy and freedom they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Traxler. And members, I should have said this at the beginning. I would ask you to hold questions, which you are right now, I know, and Dr. Traxler will be here if you have questions of her later on. So next up will be Samantha Alsadi and then Liz Padilla. Welcome to the committee. And also, members, I've been told that people online might be having a little trouble hearing us, so if everyone could speak really close to their microphone, that would be helpful.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to my testimony today. My name is Samantha Alsadi, and I'm from Eagan, Minnesota. I am, among other things, an attorney, an advocate, and a sexual assault survivor. I wanted to briefly share with everyone today why I believe it's crucial for Minnesota to create a statutory right to abortion access and not leave my rights or the rights of anyone else's bodies in the hands of anyone else but themselves. To be honest, I am deeply disappointed that I have to sit here and discuss this topic with each of you. It is truly dehumanizing to have to sit and ask Minnesota's elected officials, all of whom which I have never met before, to support my right to control what happens to my reproductive organs. I shouldn't have to ask you guys for this. Nevertheless, I am here asking all of you to do just that because I know just how dangerous it would be for Minnesota to leave the right to choose whether or not to have an abortion, our bodily autonomy rights, in the hands of whomever happens to sit on the Minnesota Supreme Court bench. Without a statutory protection, if for whatever reason the Minnesota Supreme Court decides to overturn Dovi Gomez at any point in the future. Our children and teenagers who are victims of rape, just like I was 20 years ago, may be forced to carry a fetus from their rapist to term. We are already seeing this happening in many other states, and it is absolutely horrific. Our rights to decide whether or not we will continue to carry a pregnancy must be left up to each individual. The right to control your own reproductive health must be protected by statute. I ask you all to support the PRO Act and ensure that Minnesotans have this right to choose how they're going to care for their own body and their organs. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll now move to Liz Padilla. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Liebling and members of the Health Committee. My name's Liz. Thank you for the opportunity to share my experience. I was thrilled when I learned I was pregnant. I was keeping up with OB appointments and everything was looking good. At 18 weeks, my husband and I went in for the big ultrasound. The tech pointed out a few key areas of anatomy and told us it was a boy, and I was overjoyed. But a few minutes later, my doctor called us into her office, and I could tell right away that something was wrong. And I'll never forget the words that she used, not compatible with life. I was devastated. I also felt trapped because I was still pregnant. I told the doctor I wanted an abortion, and I wanted to move forward as quickly as possible. The day of my abortion was a rainy day in May, and my husband and I drove past protesters in the parking lot. We were met by a kind volunteer who escorted us into the Planned Parenthood building. The abortion itself was fast, physically painless, and I experienced no emotional trauma. That summer, I rested, I bonded with my two-year-old son, I worked, and I processed my grief. I have never for a second questioned my decision to get that abortion. Continuing that pregnancy would have been detrimental mentally and emotionally. It would have negatively affected those around me, my son, the patients I was treating in my capacity as a therapist. Access to a safe legal abortion gave me agency in a terrible circumstance. It ended my suffering. This story is about more than just me and my family. It is about an individual's right to make a deeply personal decision. And that is why I ask you to support the PRO Act. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. All right, we will now move to the public testimony portion of our hearing. And we do have, I think, 19 people signed up. So our intention is to alternate between people who support the bill and people who don't. We're going to do that as much as we can, and we will give each person, unfortunately, just a minute and a half. I do apologize that we don't have the ability to give you more time. If we call the time, if you hear the timer and you're in the middle of a sentence, of course, please finish your sentence, and then we'll expect you to wrap it up. And again, I would just ask committee members to hold questions until the end, and then we have amendments that we'll be taking up, and there'll be a time for discussion. So the first person who's listed here that we're going to call is Tim Miller, and then the next one will be Dr. Amy Hertz, so that you could be ready to come up, and we'll try to minimize the time between folks so that we can be using our time for actually hearing from the testifier. So, Tim Miller, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And my name is Tim Miller, and I'm the Executive Director of Climate Action. I'm going to give a very brief version of my utter disgust for this bill. I never thought in all my years serving here or just as a citizen that we would actually be considering something like this. If you vote for this bill, you vote for a school counselor being able to take a student to an abortion clinic. She has an abortion and she goes back to school and her parents never know. You'll allow predators and traffickers covering their tracks. you're going to allow for a 40-week child to be killed. This bill is not about women's rights over their own bodies. I know that's the name of it, and I know that that's what wants to be said. I've always found it interesting that they say it's a woman's personal choice, when in fact, in my experience, it's their burden, and legislators are telling them that it's all on them when that happens. Despite the lies that are said about us, those who defend the unborn also care for these very same mothers. We also care for the women who testified here. This bill pits the mother and the child against each other. I do want to say that if you are here or you're watching and have been affected by abortion, know that I do not judge or condemn you. The creator of this universe does not judge or condemn you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, please vote no for this bill.
Thank you. Dr. Amy Hertz, and the next up will be Dr. R. Paul Post. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Katiza Watoon, and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Amy Hertz, and I'm a board-certified OBGYN practicing in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'm a member of the Legislative Committee of the Minnesota Section of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG. I am here today representing Minnesota ACOG in strong support of HF1. As obstetrician gynecologists, we recognize that access to comprehensive reproductive health care services is essential to women's health and well-being. It is also a human right, and these rights are centered on a woman's ability to make the best choices for their lives. Excuse me. The choice whether or when to become a parent is one of the most private and important decisions a person can make. Having reproductive freedom empowers our patients to achieve their life goals and gives them autonomy to care for and support their families. I hear daily from OBGYNs in other states about barriers to providing care of women with life-threatening conditions during pregnancy due to laws in their states prohibiting healthcare providers from administering necessary treatments to their patients. I have also personally taken care of women who have traveled to Minnesota to receive necessary reproductive care that is not available to them where they live. I am grateful to practice in a state where my patients are able to access comprehensive reproductive health care, and HF1 is an important step in protecting the rights of patients in Minnesota. A full spectrum of reproductive options is the ultimate form of preventative care. Giving each individual control over their own reproductive lives is better for patients, babies, families, and communities.
Okay.
As the federal protection to privacy for all reproductive choices has been depleted, let's work to ensure Minnesotans know their rights will not be infringed upon here.
All right.
Let's continue to be a...
Thank you. I'm sorry. You're at time.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Okay. Dr. R. Paul Post. And then next will be Christy Hall. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm testifying in opposition to HF1. My name is R. Paul Post, MD. I'm a retired family physician, having practiced family medicine in the state of Minnesota for 40 years. For 27 year of those years, I included obstetrics in my practice and delivered over 900 babies. My opposition to this bill is focused on the following points. One, the language in the bill is quite extreme, talking of the rights of individuals, but does not define what is meant by an individual. Does this include all minors with no age restriction? If you have adolescents or remember your own adolescence, we all know that teens have limited decision-making ability, especially as it relates to decisions with long-term consequences. Also, there's no mention in the bill of the individual rights of the unborn child. As much as pro-abortion advocates hate to admit that an unborn child may have rights, there are numerous well-documented studies that demonstrate that preborn children can experience pain as early as 24 weeks. There are also studies that show preborn children as early as 20 weeks will withdraw from a pinprick, but it's debated whether this is truly perception of pain at the cortex level or just a reflex. At any rate, when intrauterine surgery is performed as early as 22 weeks, analgesia and anesthesia are routinely used. Second point, the bill makes no mention of the potential harms of abortion. Psychological. Many cases are documented of women with depression, PTSD, and regret years after an abortion. I have personally counseled numerous women dealing with these issues. Second, risks of complications from surgical and medical induced abortions. These are real and not insignificant, including infertility, severe infections, and even death.
I have to ask you to wrap up, please.
Okay.
We're past time.
Okay. The third point, Bill makes no mention of restricting late-term abortion, which is a brutal procedure, and it's amazing to me that a few blocks from here at St. Paul Children's NICU, doctors and nurses are working feverishly to save children as young as 22 weeks, and yet we are allowing these procedures.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next is Christy Hall, and following Christy Hall will be Tammy Barry. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christy Hall. I am the senior staff attorney, which is a legal and policy advocacy nonprofit dedicated to advancing gender equity through the law. I'm here today to share our support for HF1 and to demonstrate the immense support for protecting and expanding abortion access across Minnesota. Gender Justice is the home of Unrestrict Minnesota, a coalition for reproductive rights, health, and justice in this state. Unrestrict Minnesota is a multiracial coalition that is made up of healthcare clinics, abortion funds, practical support groups, LGBTQ plus advocacy groups, faith communities, organizers, lawyers, doulas, and more. Our broad coalition represents the vast majority of Minnesotans that are supportive of abortion rights. In 2019, we filed a lawsuit challenging abortion restrictions in the state. And last July, a judge determined that those restrictions were unconstitutional and permanently blocked their enforcement. This included a medically inaccurate script that doctors were required to read, a second medically unnecessary appointment for patients seeking abortion care, a ban on advanced practice clinicians prescribing abortion medication, and more. And the lifting of those restrictions had an immediate and positive impact on providers, Minnesotans seeking abortion, and people from the upper Midwest and across the country who've lost meaningful access to reproductive health care. But we shouldn't have to go to court to protect our constitutional rights.
I have to ask you to wrap up, please.
Thank you. HF1 is an important first step in protecting these rights within our law books, a right that's widely supported by Minnesotans across the state. We commissioned a poll of Minnesota voters. Almost two-thirds of voters want these.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Tammy Barry, and next is going to be Amy Ruiz Plaza. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am the grandma of an aborted baby. In 2010, my 17-year-old daughter found herself pregnant and afraid. Instead of coming to me, she made a phone call to the abortion clinic. One call started the process of a loss greater than one can imagine unless you experience it. People at the abortion clinic told her they would take care of everything. She just needed to pay, be at the clinic at a certain day and time, and everything would be over when she left. Following their direction, her boyfriend took her to the clinic where she would get into a vehicle and was transported by a member of the clinic to the courthouse where a judge, through judicial bypass, told my child she was free to kill my grandchild without my permission or my knowledge. I'm sure that's not the language that he used, but that is the permission that he gave. I'm angry that option wasn't as available. The grief is real. The after effect of that decision is devastating. At no time did anyone tell her there were other options or tell her that this could harm her mental health for years to come. With post-abortive women can suffer from post-birth hemorrhages, and contemplation of suicide, which both of those things happened with my daughter. Months later, she broke down and told me this had happened. I watched her suffer for years. To say abortion is women's health care is absurd. I am asking you to please stop this dark and devastating option.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next is Amy Ruiz Plaza, and then we have Benjamin Dorr following. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Amy, and I am here with the Young Women's Initiative Cabinet.
Restricting abortion access disproportionately impacts marginalized groups of people, especially young BIPOC women. Safe legal abortions are a necessary component of comprehensive health care. And in a free society, every person should be supported in their personal choices and decisions regarding their own body and their health. It is a basic ethical principle of autonomy. Abortions have been life-saving for countless women, and there are already many stories of women who have lost their lives after the overturn of Roe v. Wade due to the inability to access and receive adequate health care services. We all deserve the right to bodily autonomy and to deserve to decide what's best for our bodies. This bill will not only ensure that Minnesotans will not be denied an abortion, it will also ensure that women and people who menstruate have access to contraceptives and other reproductive preventative measures. Pregnancy in certain situations can often be one of the most physiologically and psychologically difficult experiences a woman can go through. And passing this bill will ensure that maternal and birth outcomes improve, and it will also significantly contribute to the well-being of and health of our communities. Thank you, Cabinet and Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. First one to not have to hear the bell. Okay, Benjamin Dorr, and then we've got Munira Mohammed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee. I come in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and on behalf of the members of Minnesota Right to Life. Tearing babies in pieces is evil. Ripping their arms and legs off is evil. Stopping their little hearts from beating is evil. Murdering little boys and girls is evil because they are made in the image of God. Minnesota Right to Life and our rapidly growing support base oppose House File 1 and any other abortion bill, and we demand that this committee vote no on this legislation. But we know that you don't care about opinions. God says in Proverbs 8:36 that all those who hate me love death. And that's obvious in this legislation. Because other so-called pro-life organizations refuse to engage, refuse to spend money at election time, refuse to hold elected legislators accountable for their actions, we can see why you've become unconcerned about political repercussions from the normal pro-life community. But those days are ending. Minnesota Right to Life is not like those organizations. We are ready, willing, and able to expose any politician, especially the politically vulnerable ones who vote for this legislation in all future elections. We will never forget this vote, and we will never let the pro-life community forget this vote. Long after the fire has died down over the overturning of Roe versus Wade, Minnesota Right to Life will be in districts across the state exposing politicians for their pro-death votes that cost the lives of countless thousands of unborn babies. We promise. Thank you.
Yeah, didn't get the bell
either. You didn't get the bell. Next is Munira Mohammed, and then following is Alicia Olson. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, thank you, Chair Liebling and members of the House. My name is Munira Mohammed. I'm with the ACLU of Minnesota. That's the American Civil Liberties Union. It's a longstanding organization devoted to preserving individual rights and liberties enshrined in our Constitution and laws. I'm here to speak in support of the PRO Act regarding reproductive health rights. This is a timely and urgent civil liberties issue dealing with bodily autonomy and reproductive freedom. The ACLU of Minnesota believes in protecting fundamental rights and the dignity of individuals to make choices about their own bodies without interference from the government. Autonomy and privacy are the core of this issue. People should have the right to make private healthcare choices unobstructed and unmediated by some outside source. While the PRO Act is a good way to codify reproductive rights, the ACLU urges the legislature not to stop there. There is a long list of other legislation needed to repeal unnecessary restrictions currently in state law. It should be noted that a district court judge struck these restrictions down as unconstitutional, yet they still exist on the books. Just passing the PRO Act and not going further could potentially risk a situation where the rights are on there in state law and yet cannot be meaningfully accessed by people that need it most. This is a conundrum that the ACLU faces regularly, arguing that people should have the right and that they should be able to exercise those rights meaningfully. The ACLU of Minnesota is supportive of the PRO Act and other proposals to protect and expand reproductive freedom. Thank you to the chair.
Thank you. Very close. Okay, Alicia Olson, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, and then following will be Angela Erickson. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. My name is Alicia Olson. I am here today on behalf of Students for Life Action and Students for Life of America, one of the nation's largest pro-life youth organizations and political and policy that engages people of all ages. As a community organizer running the campaign for abortion-free cities here in St. Paul, I'm here to tell you about my experience talking to the families and the women in our communities. More importantly, I'm here as a young Minnesotan asking you to oppose this new law before you that could codify abortion up to the moment of birth. Not only is allowing abortion cut the future of a child short, but allowing it that late in pregnancy is cruel because a baby can feel pain at 20 weeks gestation. I was talking to this woman in October who said that she had a miscarriage at 20 weeks. Abortion in Minnesota is legal to 23 weeks and 5 days, and she was able to hold her baby girl, and it tore her up. And she could not imagine allowing that in Minnesota, especially for minors. This legislation pushes for more abortions while leaving abortion vendors in Minnesota with zero accountability. This is a reckless law that harms women. Women in our communities know that abortion makes empty promises because I've talked to them and they talk to me with tears in their eyes because they're still grieving the abortions they had 20 plus years ago. I'm asking you as a young Minnesotan to vote no.
Thank you for your testimony. Angela Erickson, and then we'll have Ann Fredrickson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the rest of the committee. My name is Angela Erickson, and I'm 30 years old, a wife, mother of 5 living children, and one child I never got to know. I'm here today to give a voice to the voiceless, the most vulnerable among us, our children. It really is as simple as this. At the moment of conception, a unique, whole, living organism is created. This organism is unrepeatable and unquestionably human with its own DNA and blood type. This may sound redundant, but bear with me. If a newly conceived organism is growing in the womb of the mother and has 2 human parents, it must therefore be human. Why then does this newly conceived child not receive the same equal rights that we enjoy, especially the right to life? Wantedness has never been an adequate qualifier for what makes someone valuable. Wantedness has never given anyone their dignity. Dignity is inherent to our very nature, and the government has no right to protect laws that are so violative of our natural rights and directly result in the killing of innocent children. Children are being dismembered in abortion facilities in our state at a rate of 27 children per day, more than 1 per hour, according to the most recent abortion report. An additional note, to conflate miscarriage care with abortion care is ridiculous because we all know that abortion, which is the intentional killing of an unborn child, is vastly different than treating a woman who has suffered a great tragedy. I would know. I've had a miscarriage. There is no doubt that the PRO Act is dangerous for women. As if it weren't heinous enough that Minnesota allows abortion on demand through birth, to propose that no limitations could ever be in place leaves women at risk of being exploited by the abortion industry at a higher rate than it already is, than they already are, by denying women informed consent, parental notice, licensure, and inspection of abortion clinics, and safeguards to prevent horrors like Gosnell, Pennsylvania. For these reasons, I'm begging you to vote against passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Ann Fredrickson. And then following will be Sheila Grabowski. Grabowski. Is Ann Fredrickson in the room? Okay, I don't think she is. So we'll go on then to Sheila Grabowski. Sheila Grabowski. Ah, very good. And then after Sheila Grabowski will be Corinna Falls. So please be ready. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Sheila Grabowski. I'm a constituent of Robert Bierman. I live in Apple Valley. And I'm here as just an average Minnesotan. I'm not pro-life. I'm not pro-choice. But I am pro-woman. I'm here to say that women have to have the rights over their own bodies, not dictated by others. And this committee, I am confident, is going to listen to both sides and come to an agreement and come up with a bill that is going to serve the purpose for women in Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, so Corinna Falls, and the next will be Christine Wheel. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Representative Tina Liebling and members of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. My name is Karina Falls, and I'm a college student and anti-abortion human rights activist from the Twin Cities area. I strongly oppose HF 259. Having my stance founded firmly in the biological reality of human life at conception, I'm wholly committed to the protection of innocent human life, both inside and outside the womb. Preborn children and their mothers deserve protection from abortion and its effects. For decades, post-abortive women have regretted their abortions. Those women now bravely pour out their hearts in raw grief over the gruesome destruction of their preborn children. To ignore their grief and dismiss their pain is cruel and blatantly anti-woman. We cannot pretend to stand for the rights of women while turning a blind eye to the results of what we promote. If abortion were merely another health procedure, like getting a tooth pulled, I ask you to consider why post-abortion trauma is so prevalent in our country. No one commits suicide because of the extraction of a tooth, yet studies show that the suicide rate reported after abortion is staggering. A few studies demonstrating this reality include suicides in pregnancy after pregnancy in Finland by Dr. Micah Gisler, abortion, substance abuse, and mental health in early adulthood by Dr. Donald Paul Sullins, and deaths associated with pregnancy outcome by Dr. David C. Reardon. It's clear that abortion is different. Women grieve after abortion because it becomes painfully clear to them that an innocent human life has been lost. I compel the committee to consider not only the lives of children lost to abortion, the effect of such a procedure on women who undergo them. As women suffragist Alice said so clearly, abortion is the ultimate exploitation of women. I urge you to vote against HF 259. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Christine Wheel, and then we're going to go to Karen Miller, and after that, Amanda Bruin, if she's here, so. Welcome to the committee.
Welcome. Thank you for having me today. I'm Christine Wheely, and I oppose this bill. This bill is, along with any other pro-choice bill, is directly a violation to the United States First Amendment and the Establishment Clause, and also the Minnesota State Constitution, according to Article 1, Section 16. That states that there was a case in Torcaso versus Watkins that states that government is not to entangle itself with any secular religious, and this is backed up. Convenience abortions are within that standing, and allowing abortion through birth violates that Supreme Court finding. I did send forth written testimony of all of the cases to support that. And so I would ask, convenience abortions are abortions none other than the mother having a medical condition or the rape or incest. And so those procedures are non-secular in nature, which means that they are not tied to a religion. Okay, so this bill, I'm opposing it because there are provisions in the United States Constitution, and according to Article 6, which all of you took an oath to, state that state officials, governors, United States attorneys will not be able to introduce, allow, or create these. I am also my mother chose life for me at 14 years old here in St. Paul. She was a homeless child on the street. And I also serve many women who have had abortions on both sides, abortions and non-abort, you know, keep their babies.
Thank you for your testimony.
I appreciate the time. Thank you for this. And
Sure to view the testimony. Karen Miller. And then we'll have Amanda Bruins. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. It's an honor to speak before you, members of the Health Committee. My name is Karen Miller. I'm a wife, mother, and educator. And for a moment, I want to encourage you to step back and consider two big picture questions. What is a human being, and when does human life begin? You see, the answer to these two questions will determine your beliefs and shape your policy. First of all, what is a human being? Some believe that a human being derives from a random collection of tissue that evolved from an animal to a conscientious human being, while others believe that all humans are created by an intelligent designer who gave each person equal, unalienable rights, such as the right to life. In the first view, a human being is a form of matter with no particular moral value, while the second view holds that every human life is a divine gift. The government has a foundational responsibility to protect human life from its very point of origin. This brings us to the second question. At what point does human life begin? Perhaps we can find consensus on a clear-cut heartbeat rule. Certainly, we all recognize that if an elderly person's heart stops beating, their body has died and they are no longer living. Similarly, shouldn't we recognize that whenever a human heart begins to beat, there exists a living person, even in utero? An appeal to a woman's reproductive rights can never supersede the unborn child's right to life. To be sure, women have many reproductive rights and options, but the termination of a life is never one of them. I urge a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Amanda Bruins, are you here? Okay, we weren't sure if Amanda Bruins was going to make it. And we have Sherry Litz. Sherry Litz, welcome to the committee.
My name is Sherry Litz. I live in Hastings, Minnesota. I'm a citizen of the United States. And I've made my home in Minnesota for the last 62 plus years. I'm here today to be a voice for the unborn. I was proud that I lived in Minnesota. Today I'm grieved and horrified to hear that the bill would allow the murdering of babies up until birth. I will ask and remind you, did you not take an oath when you took this office? I say to you, I say that if you said yes to this, you agreed to uphold the Constitution. Roe versus Wade was one of the reasons this was overturned in 2022, because it violated the Constitution. Life, liberty, and justice for all. Life begins at conception. This was a written article by pediatricians, March of 2017. Life begins at contraception. That means when they are fertile. I'm here today to be that voice for the babies that are crying out yesterday, today, and tomorrow. This is a life, a human life, that you are voting to let them live or to let them die. We give more bearing to animals than we do to human lives. My family has served this country to protect life in the United States. I am so deeply horrified by this bill. It would allow them to murder babies. I'm asking you to vote no.
Thank you for your testimony. Now we will go to Artika Roller and Guadalupe Lopez, who asked to testify together. So if they would both come forward. Welcome to the committee.
Bonjour. Thank you. Dear Chair Liebling and members of the committee, my name is Guadalupe Lopez. I'm an Anishinaabe, citizen of the Leech Lake Band of Anishinaabe. I am a genocide survivor as the First Nation people of the United States. I'm also executive director to Violence Free Minnesota. We're here to testify jointly to support the Pro-Reproductive Act, House File 1. We're statewide tribal coalitions that consist of 120 members working to end domestic and sexual violence. Member programs that we serve have surround 87 counties in Minnesota. We firmly believe that reproductive health care and choices, abortion access, and bodily autonomy are full fundamental human rights. Everyone should have the access to safe and affordable reproductive health care and abortion care. Access to safe abortions is a matter of safety for victim survivors and intimate partner violence. We know that pregnancy can increase a person's vulnerability to intimate partner violence, and forcing somebody to carry a pregnancy full term often binds them to their abuser and puts them at risk for further abuse. Victim survivors and all people deserve to be safe and to have access to full spectrum of accessible and affordable reproductive health care, including abortion. Domestic and sexual violence is rooted in power and control. Reproductive coercion and form of abuse by which a current or former intimate partner maintains power and control.
And Chair Liebling, my name is Artika Roller. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. We support 60 programs across the state of Minnesota that are providing direct care to victims and survivors. I am here to support House File 1. We firmly believe that, unfortunately, the reproductive justice and freedom has not been the reality for many communities in our country. Brown and Black and Indigenous LGBTQ plus communities face higher rates of intimate partner violence and sexual violence and reproductive coercion. Black and Indigenous people for decades in the 19th and 20th century were forcibly sterilized through these our national policies. Our communities have often been forgotten and left out of this conversation and policies surrounding reproductive health. The Supreme Court's decision has exacerbated these barriers for our communities within reproductive justice for people, brown and black folks, and LGBTQ people, including victims and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. We are asking you at this time that we believe that this is a critical for lawmakers to do whatever it takes to ensure that abortion continues to be a legal right in Minnesota. We urge you to vote yes for House File 1. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. So that concludes the testimony from members of the public who signed up to testify. And at this juncture, I would just like to, first of all, thank all the testifiers for being respectful and for sticking to the time limits. And also to note for members of the public and for members here of the committee that we've had quite a few pieces of written testimony that have been submitted, and those are in your packets. And so members of the public, those are also available to you. I believe they're over here on the table if you'd like to take a look at those. And also online. Yeah. Okay, so we are going to move now to we have had some amendments submitted on the bill, and I don't know who, if anyone, was going to offer the amendments, but I think we can take them up if any member would like to offer one of them.
Madam Chair?
Perryman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am in support of A3.
All right, so
so move to A3.
Okay, thank you, Representative Perryman. So Representative Perryman moves the A3 amendment, and that is before the committee. Representative Perryman, would you like to discuss your amendment?
Yes, I'd like to comment on A3, which is basically created for the concern of the woman and the safety of the woman as she's going through trimester 2 and trimester 3. As it progresses, the risk in Tri 2 and Tri 3 become more, and we are concerned with the woman's safety. And so A3 is requiring second and third trimester abortions to be conducted in a hospital.
All right. Thank you. All right. Representative Katiza Watoon, any comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. While I appreciate the minority party keeping in mind women's safety, serious complications associated with abortion are exceedingly rare, and the abortion-related mortality rate is lower than that of colonoscopies, plastic surgery, dental procedures, and adult tonsillectomies. There's no reason for this amendment in terms of safety of the woman. And in addition, this restriction does violate the Minnesota Constitution since a Minnesota court just struck down a nearly identical requirement because it infringed upon Minnesotans' fundamental right to access abortion last year. So I would ask members to vote no.
Okay, thank you. Representative Backer.
Madam Chair, I am in support of this amendment. Several of you know that I am an EMT. I have volunteered as an EMT for 28 years. August, I believe it was August 6th of 2021, When you get a page at 3 a.m. in the morning, Saturday morning, when a young lady is expected to give birth, that means all crap has hit the fan. You do not get a page normally for a birth. My partner and myself, we got called out. We got to the scene, and the mother did not give birth yet. She was 20 weeks, almost 21. So, of course, we did everything we could. We got her in the ambulance. Again, this is Saturday morning at 3 a.m., right on the border of Minnesota and South Dakota. That's where I live. She gave birth in the ambulance. That baby was no bigger than my hand from here to here. I did everything I could as an EMT for 28 years to save that life. It was a life when I showed up in that woman, and was a life when it was born. It was a life. We all had the right to live. Our parents, our mother chose life. I was 4 weeks preemie when I was born back in 1967. Yes, that dates me, and so forth. But that baby that I gave birth to that day, that we lost, had arms, had legs. It was a boy. And that was 20 weeks, which is the second trimester. She was going to go into the hospital the week after bed rest, starting that Monday, because of her complications. This amendment makes sense. We need birth equality, and that starts with that infant. It was the most difficult run I ever had in 28 years. Afterwards, my partner and I broke down. It's a life, folks. You're a life. This amendment makes sense. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Perriman, for the amendment. I would just say, and Representative Katiza Watun, thank you for your words. However, the substance of that, you mentioned lots of other procedures that are dangerous, but interestingly, all of those other procedures are performed in facilities that are licensed and regulated by the state of Minnesota. Abortions are not. It makes this particular amendment important when we're talking about the health and safety of women, which is exactly what we should be doing here. It is unconscionable to me that we would not support this amendment. Please vote yes. And Madam Chair, I would like to request a roll call, please.
Okay, roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for Dr. Traxler.
Oh, okay. Does it pertain to the amendment?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Dr. Traxler, if you could come forward. Go ahead and ask your question while she's coming forward.
The question is, what are the licensed medical facilities in your organization?
What are the licensed medical facilities in my organization as far as abortion facilities?
Well, in Planned Parenthood,
we do need to go through the chair. And, yeah, please do clarify the question, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's pretty straightforward. You've got in your entity facilities. I would like to know what ones are licensed medical facilities.
And are you talking about Planned Parenthood's facilities?
Madam Chair, on here on the agenda, she's listed as being with Planned Parenthood.
Okay, so that you're
and she's a medical doctor.
Yeah,
in her testimony. So
right. I'm just trying to understand your question, Representative.
It's pretty straightforward. There's a there's a definition of licensed medical facilities in the state of Minnesota, and I would assume a MD would be aware of that.
Can you answer the question, Dr. Traxler?
I mean, I don't think any of our facilities are licensed in the state of Minnesota because it's not a requirement for abortion facilities to be licensed in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. Representative
Madam Quam. Chair, the big point is the amendment would require, at a certain point that you would be having a procedure done in a licensed medical facility because there's more likelihood of complications. Earlier in the testimony, there was discussion about this not being relevant because these other procedures are done. But frankly, there's a difference between any old facility and one that's actually licensed to be a medical facility in the state of Minnesota. So I support the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Herr?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to refocus us here. I know that we have a lot of amendments in the bills in front of us, but for us to stay within the scope of what the amendment is for, I think we can have discussions about why certain entities are licensed and how the history of why certain procedures are no longer performed in certain licensed facilities, or what a life is, or how we define what a child is. But the truth is that this particular amendment speaks to something that has already been struck down by Ramsey District Court Judge Gilligan as unconstitutional in an exact same language this summer. And so I want us to really focus on the fact that this has already been established as unconstitutional and been ruled that way. So for us to keep that in mind as we're looking at ruling on this particular amendment, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. All right, the clerk will take the roll on. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, there were provisions that were struck down by a district court judge this summer. But let's be very clear, this has not been adjudicated by the Supreme Court. This has not been adjudicated by the state Supreme Court, so we should be a little bit cautious in how definitive we are when we talk about whether things are constitutional or unconstitutional. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, so we'll I would just note as well, it hasn't been mentioned here, that the amendment also includes a felony penalty for a violation of this new requirement that would be put in. So the clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes no.
Chair Liebling, no. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Akam.
No.
Akam, no. Representative Backer.
Backer, yes.
Backer, yes. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Carroll.
No.
Carroll, no. Excuse me. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins, no. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
No.
No. Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Keel.
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Murphy.
Representative Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nadeau.
Yes.
Nadeau, aye. Representative New Brindley.
Yes.
New Brindley, aye. Representative Perryman.
Perryman, yes.
Perryman, aye. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, no.
Ryer, no. Representative Smith.
Smith votes no.
Smith, no.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Is there a member who would like to offer another amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to bring forth amendment of A4.
So Representative Keel moves the A4 amendment. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would assume that everyone knows what a partial birth abortion is, but I'm going to get a little graphic. Partial birth abortions are when we deliver a child, often turning them around so that their legs or their breech are delivered first, and then in the end they're pulled apart most of the time, which the abortive doctor has to put together again in order to make sure that all of the parts have been removed. Because if you do not remove the entire fetus baby, you can suffer some serious complications, including bleeding or infections. And it is life-threatening, so it has to be done. The child's head is then crushed and the remains are removed. This is to ask Representative Khatija Watoon that we consider prohibiting that we add to this bill the partial birth that we prohibit, partial birth abortions. Children are able to feel pain. We know that. We're starting to realize that it might even be sooner than we thought. They are viable at this age often. I am the grandmother of a grandchild who was born at 3.9 ounces and did not even need oxygen when he was born. He was early. He did very well. This is the facts of informing our mothers or our, what is it, birth persons to know the consequences of this and the results. And I, myself personally, I won't go into any graphic discussions about this, but I was told because of a situation I had that had I not been at the hospital, it goes to Representative Perriman's discussion, that I would have bled to death in 5 minutes. Members, I can't get to the hospital in 5 minutes. I couldn't get an ambulance in 5 minutes. The doctor was distraught that I had gone home. I was advised to stay at the emergency room, and I ended up going back in. But more importantly, this is very detrimental. We are taking a life. And so with this, the other thing I want to talk about is this is a concern to the mothers. This is a concern to the individual's right to make sure that they're notified of what can happen and that they are notified of the results, and that this is just not a good practice that we should be providing. So I would wish that you would consider to bring this amendment forward so that we can protect. And I believe that most Minnesotans, while they may want a reproductive right, do not want this action to be taken to a life. So with that, I would ask you to consider this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Other discussion to the amendment? I'm going to try to give the author the final word, which I didn't do on the last amendment. But other discussion? Representative New Brindley.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call on the amendment, please.
All right, a roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Other discussion? All right, seeing none, Representative Katisa-Watoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, Representative Keel, I'm glad you're with us, that you were able to make it through that situation. But if a person is in labor, they couldn't and wouldn't have an abortion. It's just not how labor and delivery or abortion care work. And the truth is that abortions later in pregnancy are extremely rare and are almost exclusively done for reasons of maternal health or a severe fetal diagnosis. In those circumstances, individuals need to be able to make that private, personal, challenging, difficult decision with their doctor and without interference from us politicians. So members, I would ask you to vote no on the A4.
All right, with that, the clerk will take the roll and the chair votes no.
Chair Liebling, no. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Akam.
Akam votes no.
Akam, no. Representative Backer.
Backer votes aye.
Backer, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Carroll.
No.
Carroll, no. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins, no. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Hemmingson-Yeager, no.
Hemmingson-Yeager, no. Representative Herr.
Herr, no.
Herr, no. Representative Keel.
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nadeau.
Aye.
Aye. Nadeau, aye. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley, aye. Representative Perriman.
Perriman, aye.
Perriman, aye. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, no.
Ryer, no. Representative Smith.
Smith, no.
Smith, no.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, right?
Yep.
Okay. The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. There is another amendment. Does someone care to offer the amendment? Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A5 amendment.
All right. Representative New Brindley moves the A5 amendment. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to request a roll call on the amendment.
Okay. Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call.
And I would just ask, Madam Chair, for the courtesy, typically the author of the amendment would have a final word on the amendment. And, of course, that would be typical custom in committee. But obviously the chair gets to work at her prerogative, but I would love to be able to make final comments when I'm done. This amendment would limit abortions to the first and second trimesters of pregnancy. Typically, well, what we know at this point is that babies can feel extreme pain in the third trimester. There's still some controversy over when exactly that happens, but certainly sometime between 8 weeks and 20 weeks, a fetus is able to experience pain, significant pain. And the third trimester, starting at 26 weeks, certainly that is the case in the third trimester. Now, the three most common methods of aborting a baby in the third trimester would include being dismembered. I'm sure that all of us can imagine, as horrific as it is, what it would be like to be dismembered, burned with chemicals to the point of death, or having a needle stuck through our chests, our torsos, into our hearts. These are the three most common methods of aborting a third-term baby, and certainly would cause extreme pain. There is pretty broad consensus that even those who believe in the right to abortion should be limited, that should be limited in scope. And the current bill doesn't do that. The current bill allows for abortions for any reason up until the moment of birth. And this amendment would simply roll that back to say, you know, there really is no reason for that third trimester abortion that would cause such extreme pain to a baby. Now, even with that, the language of this amendment does still allow for an abortion under circumstances of rape or incest or the life of the mother. And the life of the mother includes not just death, but circumstances that might pose great risk to the mother. It seems the least restrictive we could do to this bill to ensure some humanity when we're discussing this very difficult issue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Other discussion to the amendment? Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My youngest son had two friends from kindergarten on who were extremely premature. They were twins, which doubled the lower birth weight. And by the time I was helping coach them in youth sports, you couldn't tell that they were in the hospital, preemies for many weeks. And they survived well, and actually I think one of them has children himself. I also have a grandson that was born over a month and a half early. And he was in the hospital and treated as preemie. He's in first grade, and you can't tell that he was a tiny, low birth weight child. And that's why I really don't understand why there wouldn't be some consideration for the survivability of the infant. You know, this amendment's basically saying that last trimester, there's a couple of components. One, you know, quite a bit of survivability, and two, it's a much more complex and difficult with more risks doing the procedure. The amendment has, I think, all of the normal considerations of, you know, incest, life of the mother, you know, that get brought up. And so I think this is probably the most commonly accepted, you know, amendment and approach for the whole of the state. So I would hope that we could add this to the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Other discussion? Representative Katizawatun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a person who experienced fertility challenges personally, became a mother through foster care and adoption, and then experienced an unplanned pregnancy and birthed a healthy baby boy, I can say with certainty that every journey into parenthood is unique, and each pregnancy is unique. Some pregnancies, no matter how many weeks, no matter the marvels of modern medicine, will never be viable. Some pregnancies do put patients' lives or health at risk, and I think that it's important to consider that some of the conditions that these fetal diagnoses may cause a baby extreme pain after the moment of birth, should a parent choose not to go through an abortion and birth that child. So I think that that is important to consider, and I appreciate the minority party bringing that up. But in these rare circumstances, because third trimester abortion is exceedingly rare, each Minnesotan should be able to make their own health care decisions. Members, I would ask you to vote no on the A5.
All right, thank you. So I just would say, Representative New Brindley, it's always been my practice in committee to give the author of the bill the final word on an amendment, and I realize on the floor it is different. But that's been my practice in committee. Of course, you know, if a member wants to speak, I'm not going to say you can't speak as long as we have time. But that's kind of our practice. And, of course, after we vote on the amendment, we'll have, since we're not out of time, we'll have an opportunity to have some discussion if you have more to say. So did you want to say something now, or can we take the vote on the amendment?
We can vote on the amendment.
All right. Thank you. So we will then, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
No.
Liebling, no. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Leach Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Akam.
Akam, no.
Akam, no. Representative Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Carroll.
No.
Carroll, no. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins, no. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Hemmingson-Yeager, no.
Hemmingson-Yeager, no. Representative Herr.
No.
Herr, no. Representative Keel.
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nadeau.
Aye.
Nadeau, aye. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley, aye. Representative Perryman.
Perryman, aye.
Perryman, aye. Representative Quam.
Aye.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer.
No.
Ryer, no. Representative Smith.
Smith votes no.
Smith, no.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. So with that, we are back on the bill as before us, House File 1, and we can have some time for questions of people who testified and or discussion. Representative.
Madam Chair, on this, a roll call on the final pass, passage or decline of the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Backer. And thank you. Yeah, we will have a roll call on the final passage. When we were on Zoom, we did that as a matter of practice. It's no longer required, so yeah. We will note on this bill, we certainly will have a roll call. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Discussion. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a couple of questions regarding the bill language. Number one, Representative Katizawatoon, can you talk a little bit about minors and how this would affect minors and what protections there are for minors in this bill?
Representative Katizawatoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative New Brindley. There is not an age limit in this bill. There are other existing protections in Minnesota law, and minors are actually able to already have abortions without notifying their parents. But this at the heart of this bill, it ensures that all Minnesotans have the fundamental right to access a variety of reproductive health care, which includes but is not limited to abortion care.
Representative New Brindley, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Katizawatoon. So this does not provide for any requirements for parental notification. It does not provide for any requirements for counseling services for a young girl who might be experiencing this. This does not provide for identifying or dealing with potential criminal activity regarding minors.
Representative Katizawatoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the definition on line 1.13, counseling regarding reproductive health care is specifically called out in the bill.
Representative Backer.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is extraordinarily disturbing to me that, particularly when it comes to children, that we are not taking measures to protect children. You know, we heard a lot over the summer about just an absolutely horrific case of a young girl being assaulted, being raped, and that resulting in a pregnancy. Horrific. However, I want to be very clear that now under Minnesota law, we are saying that there is no parental notification required. That there is nothing in law to determine what is happening in this situation with a young girl. An abuser and a rapist can be the one to take that young girl to get an abortion without consequence and cover up their crimes, because there are no protections for that minor in this bill. And without even a parental notification, the parents will never know and can never help that child get the help that they need. I do have another question, Madam Chair.
Well, Representative Brindley, you can ask your question. I just would remind you, we just have a few minutes left and we have another member who would like to speak. So, but please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Katizawatoon, the subdivision 5 says that a local unit of government may not regulate an individual to freely exercise this right in a manner that's more restrictive to this section. I am wondering how that might interplay with county facilities. So, for example, HCMC is a hospital owned and run by Hennepin County. Right now, physicians have the ability to conscientiously object. Does HCMC fall under a local unit of government? Is this going to affect those physicians and their ability to exercise their conscientious objection? And if the answer is no, how do we know that?
Representative Katizawatoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question, Representative New Brindley. This bill will be traveling to state and local government, so we will be able to get into all the nitty-gritty and on the impacts of what your question may entail, and if we do need to make any changes to the language of the bill, we'll have that conversation in that committee.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am glad that this has other stops, but it seems clear from the conversation today that my Democrat colleagues are not even willing to make concessions on the most extreme situations. This bill codifies the absolute most extreme position on abortion that allows full access to any abortion at any point in pregnancy up until 40 weeks, up until a woman is ready to deliver a baby. This is the most extreme position on abortion probably in the world. This puts us in league with places like North Korea. The entire civilized world recognizes that there are some reasonable restrictions that should take place, like a third trimester abortion, where babies feel extreme pain during those procedures, like partial birth abortions that are medically unnecessary, like requiring women to have these procedures performed in a hospital where they can receive the care that they need. But my Democrat colleagues want to advance the most extreme position on abortion that they can possibly advance. It is abhorrent, and I hope that we all vote no today.
All right, Representative Backer, and then we have Representative Smith, and then we're going to go to the author, and then we're going to take the vote. Representative Backer.
Okay, thank you, madam. I'll be brief. I would have to agree that this takes an extreme position from a EMS perspective, the health of the mother. And the reason I say that is because now in this bill, if a minor gets an abortion, because right now abortions are not licensed, and if there is a procedure done that affects the uterus, and that minor maybe it was taken by a school counselor, I don't know, or someone else, maybe the rapist, to the place and goes home and gets into complication. Folks like myself who are called 911 do not know how to care for that person because they could, like Representative Keel, bleed out. We need to take this into consideration for the life of the mother. We have heard for the last hour and a half this bill is one of the reasons, not the only reasons, is to protect the life of the mother. But now, when we do not have a bill that properly notifies the parents, maybe a 12-year-old, maybe a 14-year-old, and a complication happens, we are putting the risk of that health of that mother. And as an EMT in my other professions, when a person dials 911, they want us to save life. So this information needs to get out to the parents. We need to, as this bill moves forward, have parents to be part of this equation and not pushed out for the consideration of life of that mother. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we are time limited, but that's the unique point I wanted to share. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Representative Smith.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In my view, there's been a lot of attempts to distract from what we're doing here today. So as we wind down, I wanted to just highlight what we have done in this committee. We have fought a restriction on abortion access, especially in rural areas of Minnesota where there are not hospitals available. We have fought turning a legitimate medical procedure from becoming a felony for both the woman and the doctor involved. We have fought against other parties' attempts to turn Minnesotan against Minnesotan by allowing civil action for this very personal and medical decision. But more important than what we have fought is what we are about to pass and what we have done, and that is protecting doctors and medical professionals as well as women from civil and criminal penalties for trying to keep their Hippocratic oaths. We have defended pregnant persons' ability to their own bodily autonomy and be able to make critical decisions without the interference of the state, and we have recognized the complexities that women and families and all those who can be pregnant face with these difficult decisions. I am proud and extremely happy to support this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Final word, Representative Katiza Watoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the discussion today. Thanks to the Minnesotans who came to share their stories and share their thoughts with us. I just want to, in closing, clear up a couple of things that might have been a little bit misleading in member conversation. The providers, the medical professionals who provide abortion care are licensed. And over 95% of minors do talk to a trusted adult, whether that's a parent, aunt or uncle. School counselors are trusted adults too, before they would move forward with this sort of reproductive health care. I don't think it's extreme to give Minnesotans the ultimate say over their body, to provide Minnesotans with bodily autonomy, to ensure that they have reproductive freedom. And I would ask members to support HF1.
All right, thank you. Clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Chair Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Akam.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Backer.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Carroll.
Aye.
Carroll, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Hemmingson-Yeager, aye.
Hemmingson-Yeager, aye. Representative Herr.
Aye.
Herr, aye. Representative Keel.
Keel, no.
Keel, no. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, no.
Murphy, no. Representative Nadeau.
No.
Nadeau, no. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley, no. Representative Perryman.
Perryman, no.
Perryman, no. Representative Quam.
Yeah.
Quam, no. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. Representative Smith.
Smith, aye.
Smith, aye.
There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, House File 1 is re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law. So that will conclude our business for today. And again, I thank everyone for a very respectful, although passionate, discussion. And we will meet again on Tuesday, and we will post the agenda for Tuesday. We expect to have some overviews on Tuesday. So thank you, everyone. We stand adjourned.